Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to help you win at work and succeed at life. My name is Stu McLaren, and I'm filling in for our good friend Michelle Cachette, who is away finishing up her recovery with her battle of cancer. But the good news is she's going to be right back here soon enough because she is kicking cancer's butt, and she is making progress a lot faster than doctors expected. So we're excited to have her back, and I know all of you are too. Michael, I'm excited to be here in studio.
Hey, Stu. Thanks so much for filling in.
Yes.
I haven't said this enough, but you're doing a terrific job.
I'm trying my best.
You're not doing so well that I don't want Michelle back. I do want her back, but you're doing a great job.
Let's just be honest, right? It's true. Michelle and I do have differences. A, she's got longer hair. That's the main difference, right?
That's true.
Well, I'm excited, and we are in studio, and we got another great episode coming up. How you feeling? You good? You feel energized and ready to rock and roll?
I do. Yeah, I'm excited. Excited about this particular episode because it's really different than what most people talk about when they think about leadership.
Definitely. Well, we are today going to be talking about why learning to lead means learning to follow. Kind of almost counterintuitive in some sense.
Yeah.
But I want to take a quote from your blog first and get your thoughts on it. One of the things that you wrote was, an entire industry has sprung up around the topic of leadership. It includes books, magazines, blogs, conferences, and even graduate degrees from major universities. Apparently, the market is vast. Why? Because nearly everyone sees him or herself as a leader. But where are the followers? I contend that if you want to be a great leader, you must first become a great follower. Have you had any experiences that kind of underscore this idea of learning to follow in order to become a great leader?
Yeah, like most of the things I write about, they come out of some experience that I had. And, you know, I had the privilege of working at Thomas Nelson with John Maxwell. He's still a very dear friend of mine, has written a ton of books on leadership, and he is the leadership guru out there. But for all the books that are written on leadership, not much has been written on followership, and yet I think that's a prerequisite. Mm. I worked for a man for a number of years that had never been a follower.
Wow.
You know, he was a guy that basically founded a company. He was enormously successful almost immediately. He was the CEO from day one. He remained the CEO. And here's what that looked like operationally to the rest of us that worked for him. He didn't have any empathy. You know, mm-hmm. he had never had to work for somebody else.
He couldn't relate to what were doing in
he
your
couldn't
position.
Relate. Yeah. You know, he was just used to giving orders, never on the receiving end of taking orders. So he didn't have any empathy. He was often unreasonable. He could kind of give full vent to his emotions without consideration for anybody else. He was just really hard to work for and mm-hmm. kind of a jerk.
Yeah, and that creates a tough environment because he can't relate to you. You're having a hard time relating to him in the sense of, you know, meeting his expectations and so forth, and it creates a bad environment.
He kind of expected us to read his mind.
Right.
You know, I mean, there just was a lot of bad things. And the people that I think have made the worst leaders in history, have made the worst leaders that I've experienced as I've been in the business world, are people that acquired sudden fame, were put in a position of leadership because of their talent, because of maybe their education, usually not because of their experience. And because of that, they were just almost unbearable to work for. And the best leaders, conversely, were people that learned to follow well.
Hmm.
And they were really good followers, and they learned what it meant to be a good follower, and therefore they made really good leaders.
So your whole premise for this episode is that learning to follow is going to help you become a much better leader.
Yes.
Got it.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm...
And that's where most people are.
Right.
I mean, because here's the truth. I don't care if you're the CEO of your company, and every CEO that I'm about to say this to knows that this is true. You have a boss.
Mm.
You know, I remember when I was the president and COO of Thomas Nelson, I thought, man, once I become the CEO, that's it, baby.
Yeah,
no accountability. Yeah. You know, I'm going to be the king of my little domain.
Everybody reports to me.
That's
I don't report
right.
to anybody.
No, I would have never said it quite like that. But I mean, there was the kind of secret fantasy in the back of my head. Once I became the CEO, suddenly I went from having one boss, who was the previous CEO, to now suddenly I had seven bosses, which were all the members of my board.
Right.
Who were now calling me, wanting me to report into them, give me information. I mean, it was crazy.
Wow.
So everybody, almost everybody has a boss. Now, I have the luxury, because of the way I've built my current business, I don't have any board members, which, by the way, I probably ought to change going forward, just as a matter of advice and counsel, but that's another conversation. I don't have any debt, so I don't have any bankers, you know, that are involved with me or any shareholders. So that's a great position to be in, but it's also very, very rare.
Right.
Almost everybody has a boss. And so this, whether you're the boss or you're the person working for a boss, this episode applies to you.
Well, I'm excited to dig into it. And you've outlined five characteristics that all great followers have in common. And again, the premise here is become a great follower, and it's going to help lead you to becoming a great leader. And so let's talk about those, starting with the first characteristic.
Yeah, the first characteristic is that a great follower is clear, and clear specifically on his role. So what sometimes happens in companies is that people who are working for others aren't clear on their role. They're not clear that they're to be a follower. And the truth is, we all play both of these roles, as I said previously, but they're not clear. I had a man that worked for me one time who I felt was always challenging my authority. He wasn't clear in his own role. My attitude towards my boss has always been, I want to make the boss the hero. Because if I can make him the hero, make him look good, help him accomplish his goals, that ultimately I'll get what I want. And I take that from Zig Ziglar, who talked about in another context, help enough people get what they want and you'll get what you want.
I think about it in marriage. If mama ain't happy, nobody happy.
We say that in Nashville, and it's exactly right. But seriously, you know, if you think in the context of customer service, you know, if you help your customer get what they want, you're going to get what you want. Well, the same thing here is true. Your boss is your first and most important customer.
Yep.
You know, if you're working for a boss, that's your customer. And your job is to keep that customer happy and to know what your role is. And your role is not to compete for the limelight or the spotlight. It's not to compete for the microphone. It's not to compete for the glory. You know, make the boss look good, make them successful, and eventually it will accrue to your benefit.
So another context of that would be for somebody building a platform business, for example, featuring and highlighting people in your audience is a great way to make that same distinction where they are the hero of your story or the story, and really highlighting, you know, what they accomplished. So an example would be in with the Best Year Ever course, highlighting people who have done a great job applying the course content and improving their lives and achieving their goals or and so forth. But
well, and the thing, the reason this is important is because the best leaders know that it's not about them.
Right.
And the worst leaders think it's all about them. Hmm. And so it's all about their comfort, all about their glory, all of that. But so if you can learn that as a follower, it's going to make you a better leader.
Right.
And so the truth is, it's never going to be about you, whether you're a follower or a leader. And you might as well learn that earlier as a follower.
And I think the underlying message there, too, is as a follower, the more you make your higher ups, if you will, the star of the show or, you know, make them feel good about things, the more progress you're likely going to make in your own career or movements and so forth.
Yeah, totally. That's totally
the
right.
The faster the path is to becoming the leader yourself.
Yep. And I've had people write into me, and some of them will complain, well, what if I work for a jerk? Hmm. You know, well, you know, honestly, most people do at some point in their career. In fact, I recommend it. If you don't have the opportunity to work for a jerk, go out and find the opportunity. Because you learn way more from working for a bad boss than you learn from working for a good boss. And, you know, I'm being a little bit facetious, but there's lessons to be learned either way. But I think that one of the values you can learn from somebody that for example, that won't give you credit, like maybe your boss has a big presentation to make to the board, and your job is to prepare the presentation and maybe go in and assist. And so the boss doesn't give you any credit. It's okay. Hmm. Don't worry about it. Because if you make him look good in front of his audience, you're going to become an indispensable part of the team, and the cream is going to rise.
Right.
And I've seen this time and time again in my own career and the careers of other people. You know, I know there are situations you can get into where that may not happen, but more times than not, if you'll be just faithful, show up, be clear on your own role, and really know where you stand with relationship to your boss and what your role is, you'll do okay.
So we're talking about the five characteristics that all great followers have in common. And number one characteristic is they are clear. What's the second characteristic?
The second characteristic, and this is very politically incorrect, but is to be obedient.
And what do you mean by that?
I mean, somebody that can take orders. Somebody that when the boss says he wants something done, it doesn't mean you can't voice an objection, but at the end of the day, when the boss calls the shots and decides that the company's going to go in this strategic direction or some other direction, then you're able to fall behind that and support the boss.
So let me challenge you on this. What if you disagree with the direction that your boss has decided to go? How do you be obedient and yet still voice your concerns?
Yeah, well, let's talk about it from the boss's side first. And let's just, to frame this, let's put it in the right context. We're not talking about a moral issue. You know, like maybe the boss has just asked you to do something that is illegal or unethical. So let's just take that off the table. We're assuming that everything is
It's more of a strategic direction or something like
that. Yes, a strategic direction or even a tactical implication. You just disagree with it. The best bosses will create an environment that's safe for dissent so that you feel like you're not putting your life at risk by voicing a concern.
So there's a safe environment for discussion to happen.
That's right. So not every boss will do this. In fact, most bosses won't do this. So if you're working for a boss and it's not exactly safe, what you've got to do is be able to frame the objection in a way that helps the boss get ultimately what they want to get. This is very important. This is basically selling 101. So let's just say that the boss decides the company's going to go in a certain strategic direction. You don't agree with it. You've got to frame it as something that's going to become an obstacle to him getting what he wants. Because let's just assume for a second that he or she, whoever the boss is, they're intent on getting what they want. And all you're doing is saying, I don't think that strategy is going to get what you want. Here's another way that will get what you want. You know, so this can't become a battle over my strategy is better than your strategy. Right. I'm smarter than you are. I think that's dumb. You haven't done your research, whatever. It's got to be, okay, let's go back to the drawing board and talk about what you want. And I did that for several years with a man that I worked for who I often disagreed with him, and it wasn't exactly safe. And I saw a lot of my colleagues chewed up by him because they challenged him openly, and it got to the point where people wouldn't challenge him openly
because they were scared of him.
They were scared of him.
Yeah.
And I would always go back and reframe it. I would say, okay, let's look at what is it that you're really after here, and I just wonder if there's another way to do it. You know, and I've got another plan. It's still going to get you what you want. In fact, I think it's going to get you more of what you want.
Yeah.
But you got to frame it in that way.
And it's important there in that situation to be mindful of the end game. What is the end game? That's the most important thing that the boss is after.
That's right.
It's not necessarily, may not necessarily be the strategy itself. It's the result of the strategy. And if you can show them how to get to the same result in a faster, easier, more efficient, better way, then ultimately they're going to be much more open to hearing that versus that combative, my strategy versus your strategy.
Yeah, and I honestly, I didn't ever have any trouble with it. But let me just say this, that at the end of the day, if the boss hears you out and says, you know, Stu, I've heard what you say. I understand why you believe your strategy is better than the one I've proposed, but we're going to do it my way. Then I think that a good follower who wants to be a great leader will say, okay.
And have trust in that and faith
trust in
that.
Yeah,
and
obedient. You know, you've heard me out and I'm going to go with it. And here's what that looks like. And this is really important. That doesn't mean that you badmouth the boss behind his back.
Right.
Or you talk about, you don't support him behind the back, his back. So my philosophy was always support in public, confront in private. So, and I said this to all my subordinates when I was in the corporate world. I said, look, you can say anything you want to me in private. I'd be grateful if you'd support me in public.
Yep.
You know, so if you want to come to me and you can tell me I'm a knucklehead, you disagree with this, it's stupid, you can fight me, you can yell and you can scream. But when we walk out of my office, I want you to be supportive. I want us to be aligned as a team because it creates a lot of confusion and a lot of unproductive sideways energy in the organization when people see that the leadership team is not aligned.
Right. Okay, so we're talking about the five characteristics that all great followers have in common. Number one, they are clear. Number two, they are obedient. What's the third characteristic?
This is one that, it's also a concept that isn't talked about a lot, but they're servants.
So how is being a servant different than being obedient?
I think it's a frame of mind You know, it's basically, I'm here to serve. And it's, again, all these overlap.
Yep.
But it's like what we said earlier. It's not about me. It's about you. I want to be observant. The thing that, the key thing about a servant, a really good servant,
yep,
and we were talking about somebody that works for you earlier this morning. And I think one of the things that you like about this person is that they're observant, that they see what needs to be done. The best servants, the best workers, the best followers take initiative.
Right.
They don't have to be told. They're observant, and they cultivate this. They're observant to the needs of other people.
They look to find solutions before a solution is almost needed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's and being in that situation, having the person that you're talking about work for us, it's been an incredible experience because you begin to appreciate them so much more because you know that they have your best interests in mind and they're looking for ways to make your life better.
That's right.
And that becomes so valuable from a leader standpoint to have somebody on your team who has that that vision, you know, and that intent.
Well, and the cool thing is that if you learn this as a follower, it'll serve you well as a leader, because I really believe in the concept of servant leadership. The best leaders are those that serve the people under them. So let's kind of think of it as an inverted pyramid. You know, the leader's not at the top of the pyramid with everybody else, you know, lots of minions serving him or her, but it's at the bottom. You know, how can I serve the people that I'm in a relationship with? And, you know, I just was thinking about this. One of the best servants that I know is Andy Traub. Do you know Andy?
Yeah, Andy's a great guy.
You know, so I've been with Andy at conferences. I've been with him, you know, when I've been speaking somewhere and he's just been one of the participants. And he's constantly attentive to other people, including me. I've been on the receiving end of that. And I just, I'm amazed by that.
He was actually the first person to introduce us.
Oh, that's right.
Way back.
Andy, thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. Way back in the day. And you're right, because one of my first interactions with Andy was I was speaking at a conference that you and I were both speaking at. And he took a picture. This was a panoramic picture of me on stage and the audience. And he just sent it to me. And it was a great picture, you know, that I was very grateful for. And that's a good example of he was just looking to serve, just to be helpful. And knowing that I couldn't take that picture myself, obviously. And it was just a moment when he stepped up and just, it was something little, but it meant a lot.
Yeah, I remember one time expressing that I was frustrated with my iPhone case. And a couple days later, I get an iPhone case from him in the mail.
Wow.
You know, amazing iPhone case.
Yeah, great example.
Yeah.
Okay, so far we've covered 3 of the 5 characteristics. We still got 2 more to go. And we're talking today about learning to become a great follower in order to become a great leader. And we're going to be coming back with those final 2 characteristics in just a few minutes.
If you're like most members of my audience, you're committed to winning at work and succeeding in life. But the truth is, you struggle with finding enough time to do it all. And that's exactly why I wrote my new ebook, Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week, 4 proven strategies for creating more margin for the things that matter most. You can't buy Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week, but you can get it for free by subscribing to my free email newsletter. My email newsletter notifies you whenever I've posted fresh content to my blog, so you don't always have to visit my blog to stay up to date. To get your free copy of the Shave 10 Hours Off Your Work Week ebook, visit michaelhyatt.com and enter your name and email address into the form on the page. If you're tired of feeling like there's never enough time to get it all done, don't miss your chance to discover how to reclaim the margin you deserve. Sign up at michaelhyatt.com.
And welcome back. We are discussing how to become a great follower so we can become a great leader. And you've narrowed it down to 5 characteristics of great followers. We've talked about the first 3. Number 1, they are clear. Number 2, they are obedient. Number 3, they are servants. What is the 4th characteristic of a great follower?
We're kind of following a pattern here, but they're humble.
Hmm.
You know, they're people that don't have to have the spotlight on them. They don't call attention to themselves. They're able to serve without getting the credit. And humility is something that isn't seen as much anymore. I don't know if it's because of social media. You know, maybe this is the dark side of social media. It makes everybody a star in their own universe.
Right.
But there's a lot to be said for humility. People that can just serve quietly and learn to do that. And I think it prepares you in a way to serve in the spotlight.
But doesn't becoming a leader mean that if you're, you know, especially if you're working your way up through an organization or something, don't you have to get recognized for certain accomplishments and achievements in order to be able to get to the next level? And if so, how do you do that if you're being humble?
Well, I think first of all, you don't have to beat your chest and say, look, take credit for this. I did this. I did that. You know, if you're really good at what you do, your work will speak for itself. Mm. And so what I find is a better strategy is to be quick to give credit to other people. You know, be quick to congratulate your team or to thank them. And here's what also humility looks like. If somebody gives you a compliment, you don't deflect it. That's not humility. Say, well, no, I did. It wasn't me. But you just say thank you.
Mm.
You know? You don't have to embellish it anymore. You don't have to say, well, yeah, you know, I did work 50 hours on that project and you haven't seen the half of it. It was awesome and it should have gone a lot further than it did or whatever. But you just can just say thank you. Thank you is great.
And I liked what you said there too, though, is when you give credit to others, you're much more likely to get credit back.
That's right.
And so it's kind of that inverse thing of what you were saying. You don't have to beat your chest. If you give credit to others, there's a good chance you're going to get that credit back.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not like, and I'm not saying that you give to get, but I do think that is kind of a law of the universe that you're going to reap what you sow. And if you are quick to give credit to other people and be humble in your own accomplishments, you know, but nobody likes people that are arrogant.
Right.
You know, that are taking credit for more than they really did or even for what they did.
Right.
You know, it just wears on people.
Yeah, it can have its place. Like I see it, especially you talked about social media, and I see it all the time where people are almost bragging about, you know, doing certain things, you know, through pictures and so forth. And it's great to a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts to wear on people. Yeah. Then people just become almost like bitter. It's almost, you just feel like it's too much.
Yeah.
And so you make a great point. You know, that humble characteristic is a really important piece to this whole becoming a great follower.
Well, I think one of the practical ways that we can do that as leaders and first as followers is to be quick to be transparent with our own mistakes and our own foibles and even be able to laugh at ourselves. You know,
and that's hard in social media land, if you will, because we only show the good side of our lives when the reality is, you know, there's also, you know, the other side. Like a good example, when we were completing our adoption and we were, I was sharing pictures of our new family. And of course, they're the pictures when everybody's smiling. But there's another picture that I put together that's three pictures of my daughter. And they were all faces of her in disgust of me trying to take another picture. And it's kind of like, but though you share those moments because they, people appreciate the fact
they
that,
do.
You know, you're real, you're human, you know, life isn't, you know, pinpoint perfect. There's realness to being humans.
Well, and this is what creates connection with people.
Right.
And this is what it means to become a leader that other people trust. But you learn that as a follower first, I think, in being humble.
Let me ask you a question. In those situations where a follower is speaking to a leader, is there a good time to be humble in front of a leader in terms of sharing weaknesses or things that could have that may not be perfect? Or is there are situations where you avoid doing that?
No, it depends on the boss. And I'm sure we could think of a situation where it wouldn't be wise, but I know one of the vice presidents that I had that worked for me at Thomas Nelson, one of the things that I appreciated about her the most was that when there was bad news, I always heard it from her first.
That's a great.
And so she would make a beeline into me, to my office, and she would sit down and she was fairly dramatic, but she would just say, she'd say, Michael, we got a problem. Hmm. Or she would say, I screwed up. And she would take full responsibility for it. You know, I meant to do this, but here's what I did instead. It didn't work, and I'm so sorry, but here's what I'm going to do to fix it. And so she had a great balance on that. But actually, my boss was like that at Thomas Nelson before I became the CEO. If I went in and confessed to him, or any of my colleagues went in and confessed to him, and were quick to admit their own mistakes, he was very generous, very gracious. I've written a blog post on this one time where I went in after we'd had a horrible month, and I'd learned this lesson just watching the people around him. And I went in and I confessed it. I was the first one to tell him. I said, we missed our budget this last month, and I'm really distressed about it. I'm sorry. I'm going to fix it. And he said to me, he said, well, Mike, is Romans 8:28 still in the Bible? And this is the verse in the Bible that says God works all things together for good to those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And basically what he was saying was, it's all good. Hmm. You know, that even this thing that you don't, or you think was a devastating thing, is going to be okay.
Right.
But I promise you, if I had been in a financial review meeting and tried to defend or make excuses, he would have taken my head off.
Yeah.
You know, and justly so. But I think that's how most bosses are. And I think that's part of the value of humility. If we'll be the first to step forward and take the full hit, mm-hmm. you know, just I goofed up.
Own it.
Own it.
Yeah.
Same thing with my kids.
I was just going to say the same thing.
I mean, my daughter, Madeline, if you're listening to this, you know who you are. Madeline was like the kid that whenever she did something, she was like the first to confess. And she kind of so beat herself up that I never had to do anything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just like it was a self-correcting problem. And she's still very much like that to this day. And I just love her. You know, other of my kids, who remain nameless, would be stubborn and defend themselves and not take responsibility. But in the end, it's better if we do. And right. I think we learn that as a follower. And if we'll do that as a follower, then we become the kind of leader that other people can trust.
Yep.
Because even as a leader, I want to make sure that my people hear bad news from me first. Mm. So if there's a crisis, if there's a problem in the business, if there's something that affects them, you know, I want to be thoughtful about it, but I don't want to hear that from outside. I don't want them to read about it in the newspapers.
Great lesson. Okay, so five characteristics. Number one, they are clear. Number two, they are obedient. Number three, they are servants. Number four, they are humble. What's the fifth characteristic of a great follower?
They're loyal. Hmm. This is so underrated. You know, people are willing to take a check from someone that they don't respect and speak ill of them behind their back. And I'm telling you, that never will benefit you. It's not good for the culture that you're trying to create. It poisons it. Hmm. And you've got to be the kind of person that blesses and not curses. Somebody that is willing to speak well of people who aren't present, particularly your supervisors. That's rule number one, as far as I'm concerned. Never speak ill of somebody you work for. If you don't like that person, if you can't respect them, if you just can't refrain from speaking ill of them, then at least have the integrity to quit and go somewhere where you can be loyal to somebody. Another work environment where I was in, when I went into this environment, everybody connected about the boss. And they made fun of him, you know.
So it was a connection for the wrong reasons.
It was a connection for the wrong reasons. And almost every day, you know, people would be laughing at something he said or something he did. And I just, I don't know why I had the presence of mind to do this, but I just said, I'm not going to be part of this. This just feels wrong to me to be taking a check, to be working from this for this person and for everybody to be speaking so ill of him.
Right.
And I said, I'm not going to do it. And so I didn't, you know, make a big deal about it and get all self-righteous about it. But when they would start into that, I would just quietly excuse myself. Hmm. Then in addition to that, I would consciously notice things about him that I liked and say them out loud. Hmm. So I just tried to shift the conversation because the truth is with anybody, I don't care if it's your spouse, your kids, your business partner, you have a choice what you notice. And you can choose to notice the bad or you can choose to notice the good, and then you can comment on it. And I've written in another context why it's important to speak well of your spouse in public. But it's a choice, and you get more of what you affirm.
And it speaks to what you talked about earlier. In public, you talk about the positive, and in private, that's where you discuss the other side of things.
That's right. And I'm not talking about, you know, burying this stuff or sweeping under the rug. I'm just saying that being loyal is that publicly you can affirm that other person, knowing full well that they're not, you know, perfect.
Well, this is great, Michael. And just to quickly recap for everybody, these are the five characteristics that all great followers have in common. Number one, they are clear. Number two, they are obedient. Number three, they are servants. Number four, they are humble. And number five, they are loyal. So as we wrap up this episode, can you explain some of the reasons why we may be hesitant to lean into this season of being a follower?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. One is I think that sometimes we just lack humility. You know, we think of ourselves more highly than we ought, and we think we're ready for something that probably we're not ready for yet. You know, we'll be ready eventually, but to embrace this time as a follower is a good thing. Second reason is we want to invest in our own dream, not the dream of others. But I think just the lesson of stewardship, and again, this is kind of a principle in the universe, but you kind of have to be willing to invest in somebody else's dream ordinarily before you have the opportunity to pursue your own dream.
I think this is really important, especially from my experience for young entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. You know, early on in my career, one of the greatest things that I ever did was go and mentor under somebody. I worked for very inexpensive, you know, I was very cheap labor.
Yeah.
But I wasn't there for the pay. I was there for the experience. And it's a great opportunity, I think, for anybody who's starting out to be intentional about seeking those opportunities to be a follower, to learn, to mentor, because it really does help set the stage for later on in life.
Well, and I've watched that in you, and I think it's an amazing quality because you submitted yourself to these other leaders. And I know, because we've had these conversations, they weren't perfect either. They had a lot of faults. But you were willing to learn from them, and as a result of that, now you have this amazing capacity, all these capabilities, and you're accomplishing great things in the world.
Yeah, it does certainly help. Are there any other reasons why we would be hesitant to lean into this?
Yeah, I think sometimes just fear. You know, we're afraid that not now means forever.
Right.
You know, that if we can't have our own thing now and be the leader now, that we'll never get it.
It's almost like an exercise in patience, isn't it?
It is, absolutely.
Knowing that it's the process of becoming a great leader requires you to learn to be a great follower.
Yeah.
And being patient in that process.
Yeah, and you think of all the great leaders of history. A lot of them waited a long, long time before they were able to serve.
Well, I want to thank you for today, Michael. And I just want to mention to everybody, if you'd like the show notes for today, as well as the full transcript, it's available at michaelhyatt.com. And if you would like to see our gorgeous, pretty faces, you can do that and watch the full episode in video on michaelhyatt.com as well. And lastly, can I ask a favor? Can you just take like 30 seconds right now and go to iTunes and just rate the podcast? The reason is because we want to attract more people like you to the podcast. And the only way we can do that is by getting the ratings, because that gets the show in front of more people. So go ahead, go do that now. We'd be very grateful. Michael, as we wind down, any final thoughts?
If you're a follower, embrace it. Learn everything you can from it now, because it may be that you're being trained to be a great leader. And followership is the prerequisite to that.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Michael. Thank you to everybody listening for joining us today. Until next time, remember, your life, your one and only life, is a gift. Now go make it count.